And Wendy Calvin is going to give this presentation.
Thanks, Ron. So Amy, who was one of Phil's students working on pieces of the hematite story, was not able to be here. I, although I've known Phil for 20 years, have not ever been a student. But I have been on his remote sensing field trip, which he talked about yesterday. I come from a background in geophysics and physics and sort of Roger Clark spectroscopy, and I credit Phil then with showing me that field geology, and in particular the field experience, is critical to our understanding of remote sensing data sets. And I think that Meridiani is particularly a place where that's true, where what we thought we were going to find before we got there, we were quite surprised when we got on the ground. So 5 years ago, going on our fifth anniversary on the surface, we had just completed global maps with TESS, and we had a few very small places on the planet, Meridiani being the largest, where we had the signature of bulk hematite from orbit. And so these are small patches in the whole planet where we thought we might have an aqueous origin. At that time, whether the hematite was actually aqueously formed was controversial, I would say. We had some additional geomorphology evidence of layered sediments in the region. There was additional supporting orbital data that suggested an increased bound water signature over the site, but it was not ubiquitous that everybody favored Meridiani as a place to go. And one of the first things we did on the MER team was take a vote on it should something happen to one of the two rovers on the way, either through launch or on the way to Mars, where would the team like to go? And I should say that the PI Squires was strongly in favor of Gusev Crater, as were many of the members of the science team, but the vote ended that the majority, a simple majority, actually favored Meridiani based on the orbital geochemistry. I think the rest, as they say, is history. We soon found that the iron was in small spherules in a later sedimentary hematite, and we now have hundreds, if not thousands, of sites that indicate aqueous geochemistry on Mars through Omega and Chrism. But that's not where we were when we started. I think Gusev and the mini-TESS instrument on Spirit has shown, to start with, we sort of saw typical Mars, but over time the spectroscopy has turned out to be quite diverse and very interesting, and Stephen didn't talk about that, but has published that. Meridiani is kind of the opposite. It started out being visually very stunning, but spectroscopically has been dominated by four primary components, even in our long trek from Eagle over to Endurance and down to Victoria Crater, and those are the spherules themselves of basaltic sand, the outcrop blocks that we see, and then a dust component, both dust on the surface and dust accumulation with time on the mirror. And so even in what is now over 12 kilometers of traverse distance, we still see these four really dominant seen end members. The added complication then is a slow accumulation of dust on the optical components of the instrument, so that about a year ago we actually stopped taking mini-TESS data because we were not seeing any seen radiance but just dust on the mirror optics. We're currently doing some testing to see if we can't try and mechanically remove some of that, shake some of it off. But those tests remain to be done to see if we will have success with that. So a quick outline, I just wanted to show then what the spectral components of Meridiani are, so you know what their spectral shapes are and how they come in. Summarize the results on hematite, which is a paper in press with JGR. Talk a little bit about our current analysis, which is looking at then outcrop diversity and sulfate diversity in the outcrop materials, and then talk about how we go about improving the signature and dust removal signature. So hematite then in the spherules that have a range of grain sizes, and the spectral shape that we see then is this large doublet here, which is characteristic of a bulk or a coarse-grained hematite, not fine-grained distributed material. I do not remove the CO2 features, so these strong features here between about 650 and 700 are the CO2 in the atmosphere. We have an end member hematite, which gets lost in the midst of all the surface observations. And then the other component that we usually see here is a small little spectral V, about 850 wave number, and this is actually dust on the surface that shows up in a variety of stairs. The image doesn't come out very well. Although Meridiani is not a terribly dusty place, there is dust on the surface, and we looked hard to find a patch of it that was big enough to actually fill a mini-TESS field of view. This particular spot we called Cool Whip when we were in our ice cream naming theme, and then we stopped to actually do APXS and Mossbauer on this particular spot just outside of Eagle Crater. So we see then the typical dust signature here, the V-shaped here. We saw that at Cool Whip in yellow, at another rock target later on. This is similar dust from the Spirit site in red. And then Tim Glotch did sort of an elegant principal components called target transformation. And one of the end members that came out of Tim's target transformation is then also a dust end member. So this little V is dust on the surface. The other major component we have then is basaltic sand. Basaltic sand has a fairly large envelope, squared off kind of bottom shape. Good examples we looked again, hard to find someplace, although it's everywhere, a patch that would be big enough to fill a mini test field of view. This was a little spot in Endurance Crater next to adjacent to some outcrop blocks. So those are in green here. The dune forms themselves at the center of Endurance turned out to have a nice basaltic signature. We had a target transform end member that came out with this basaltic shape, and then it matched quite well the low albedo test signature from orbit, which has been the subject of many talks this morning, actually looking at the subtle details and separating out that the defined details of the low albedo signature. Then we have dust on the optics. And here, this is looking at the external calibration target. We have a little black target that we look at, which should be a perfect emitter. So early in the mission, it was fairly flat. But with time, we see the amplitude and this broad envelope increase. So these are the actual observations, and then scaled to a common value, which was my test to see if they actually had the same spectral shape regardless of the amplitude. You'll note that when the dust signature gets strong, it actually pulls down these low wave numbers, which will also then interfere with our ability to map the hematite. And we can at times see this dust signature in an inverted shape so that we know that it's on the optics. When the surface target that we're looking at is quite cold and the mirror in the mast is warm, then we actually see the dust in emission from the mirror itself. So we have this inverted signature. You can't read the temperatures here, but they're in the sort of high 240s to 250 Kelvin range. And that's not untypical for the bright outcrop rocks. So the outcrop rocks are commonly have this inverted signature, which makes it more difficult to separate them out. Then the outcrop signature is something that came out of Tim's target transform work as a broad spectral shape, shifted slightly from the basalt. You'll see when I show some unmixing results. He did a best fit on the chemistry. Two APXS, the components are shown, a little bit of silica glass, a variety of sulfates, but none, I would say, no really diagnostic sulfate particular component shows up here, but rather a mix of them. And I should emphasize that no single stair that we have from the mini test instrument represents this outcrop end member. So all our stairs are mixtures of basalt sand, the outcrop component, sometimes surface dust, and then occasionally a little bit of hematite. So to talk a little bit about the hematite spherules then, we did look at MI images. We do see a size decrease. So the pluses here are the diameter, a little triangle for the equivalent total volume from our early days in Eagle Crater down past Endurance. So we saw a decrease down to the sub-millimeter range, and then a slight increase as we approached the rim of Victoria Crater. For a time, I thought we might have a bimodal distribution, but it looks like we probably have a continuous population range, and that what we're seeing in the smallest spherules probably were small spherules that were in the outcrop overburden above us that's been eroded with time, and so that's then this last on the surface. We say we might have a micropopulation, so something that's of the order of a few hundred micrometers, but that's really at the limit of the microscopic imager, so we don't really conclusively say it's there, but there are suggestions that we might have very small spherules. Odd shapes, so these kind of funny lumpy textures we see more at Victoria, but few spheres and non-spherical shapes are still very uncommon in our 1,600 sols or so. So we did some hematite indices looking at PanCam data using all 13 geology filters and a supervised classification that gets on a shortwave turn-up in PanCam to try and pull out what percent of this scene, say, would be classified as hematite in PanCam, and did the same thing looking at a mini-test hematite index, looking at the strength of the band. This is then those indices as a function of sol, and so you see that there's a wide variety of spread in mini-test, which is the triangles, and PanCam, which is the pluses. And so a lot of it is scene diversity. We just kind of, as we drive along, stop and take a picture of what happens to be there. It could include a bunch of cobbles. It could include a ripple. It could have various dust on the surface. So the scene diversity here is really dependent on what happens to be in front of the rover rather than anything else. We do get an okay but not a great correlation between PanCam and mini-test, so we think that the two components that the different instruments are seeing is largely the same. The other thing that we see then in mini-tests, we've known that there was a strong increase in the hematite signature with angle out on the plane. So as we look out, the band gets stronger. That's actually a geometric effect. We don't see any additional components here in the 10 micron region, which is indicative of silicates, so we don't see any other component other than the iron mineralogy in the berries. But what we do see when we start to average these is actually a downturn at the highest wave numbers and a peak here at 1640 that's associated with bound water and probably present in the soils or the dust component of the surface. We had some early indications that we had outcrop variability. In particular, here at about 1100 or so, this is the wavelengths where sulfates have strong signatures, and we'd expect to see sulfate diversity here. And then also at the lower wave numbers where we have hematite. So we had some sense that we might be seeing different mini-test signatures associated with different outcrops. This was then reiterated in a paper published by Bill Farron where we do decorrelation stretch of the PanCam images, and we came up with buff and purple end members based on their DCS colors, and it turns out the purple end members have a stronger hematite signature, so the purple end members here have a little bit more of a hematite hump than those that are buff-colored end members, so that suggests that mini-tests might be sensing a distributed hematite component rather than just the spherules in these blocks. So we've been doing a simple unmixing scheme to look at first with PanCam and assess which are buff and purple end members and look at the variability of PanCam images and rocks from site to site. The mini test spot size is never a small piece of, it's actually usually larger than a block that we see in PanCam. So to try and understand what components are actually going into the mini test stairs, starting by using the target transform end members to unmix the outcrop spectra, and then we'll progress to using seen end members where we have good seen end members for basalt sand or outcrop and use those to unmix the outcrop. So which ones might then be suggestive of additional signatures, in particular sulfate variation. This is very much a work in progress. I have an undergraduate student who's been collecting PanCam and mini test coordinated observations, and right now we're just going up to Endurance Crater so that we don't have to worry about the dust component. And just some examples then of purple rocks and buff and purple faces, and then some additional over in Endurance Crater, Ellesmere, and Escher targets. So purple end members. So a mixture of target on this rock, a mini test stair would probably include buff and purple and blue type signatures. So we're trying to understand the relative proportions of those. And then just doing some linear unmixing. So this is the target transform outcrop end member. This is basalt. This is the hematite. Then we have the dust here, and so we're just doing a weighted combination of the amount of this spectral shape that goes in to match the spectrum. The original spectrum is in black, and the combination then is orange pluses. So emphasize that this is not a percent contribution, but a weighted spectral shape contribution, and we're doing an offset, so we allow it to bring the emissivity value back to the actual measured value. So we're getting actually pretty reasonable fits with this. One of the first things that we notice using the transform end members is that we're consistently over-predicting the size of the hematite here, and we seem to be under-predicting what's going on between about 800 and 900. So those are places we're going to be trying to understand better why we're getting mismatches. And then finally, quickly to talk about the dust. Spirit had a dust event, a one-time thing. Before that, we didn't have much dust, and then all of a sudden we had a ton. On Opportunity, it's been slowly increasing with time, so the strength of this envelope is the size of that dust signature that we see with time, and then we've got a dust transform end member from the target transform, and then from looking at the external cal targets, and those don't necessarily have the same shape. So we're trying to understand then what are the differences between an empirical retrieval using the cal target, using the target transform end members, and basically starting from first principles where we look at the atmospheric observations and say what should that dust shape do, and so that's something that Amy's been working on to try and understand how we best remove this so then we can look at all the outcrop spectra after Sol 300 and get more on the sulfate diversity there. And then finally, since we're still working on this, we don't have a ton of conclusions, but Amy wanted to say that Phil has inspired a generation of students through examples, stories, and bringing rocks to life in gaudy colors. And so our thanks to Dr. C, and without his efforts, none of this would have been possible. Thank you.
Thank you, Wendy. One quick question, perhaps?